And good afternoon, and welcome to the Midpoint Public Affairs portion of Mort Midpoint this afternoon. I'm Mitch Perry, reporter with Florida Politics and stpetersblog.com, speaking to you this afternoon in the WMNF studios, joined by WMNF Assistant News Director Sean Canan. Sean, hey, how you doing?
Hi, Mitch. Pretty good. You know, there's a lot of news coming out of South Carolina today in the last couple of hours. You know, first they identified the suspect,
right.
Then they caught the person that they were looking for. It's going to be, you know, a lot of the news today, I think.
Absolutely. It's going to dominate the news of the next day, if not 2 days. Dylan Storm Roof is his name, 21 years old. His Facebook profile picture shows him wearing a jacket decorated with the flags of two former white supremacist regimes. Reading this from the New York Times, in apartheid era South Africa and in Rhodesia. So, you know, as people want to know, you know, I mean, obviously it's seemingly very racist kid for the comments that he made in that church last night and obviously what he did. You know, it's another gun tragedy as well. You know, we have these happen every few months in America. People shake their heads and go, something should be done about it. Now you have this added effect of this, you know, incredibly horrific situation in a black church to add to the mix. It's just terrible all the way around. Yeah, indeed. Okay.
I look forward to hearing about your guest.
Okay, thanks. Thanks very much, Sean. So we're not going to delve into that. We really don't know much more about that than right now anyway than what you've been hearing in the news that Sean reported and with the NPR report at the top of the hour. What I am going to talk about, though, is Florida politics, and specifically, you know, you may know, of course, that the Senate race, right? Marco Rubio is not running for Senate next year, and it's an open Senate seat. A lot of people who still may get into the race, the Democrats right now, the main candidate, or what we've heard about, is Patrick Murphy, a representative from the South Florida Treasure Coast area. A lot of progressives are hoping Alan Grayson gets in the race, of course, the decidedly more liberal congressman than Murphy. He's out in Orlando, but no word yet on if he's going to do that. But there's actually another candidate, a Senate Democrat, in the race right now, who's actually, if you look at her website and her what she's talking about, it seems pretty progressive as well, and that's Pam Keith. And hopefully we've got Pam on the line here. I think, right, is it my turn to pick this up here? Hello, Pam, are you there with us?
I am, Mitch. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Pam, thank you so much for joining us. And again, Pam Keith, a Senate candidate for the Democratic nomination for the Senate here in Florida. So a lot that we want to ask you about. What I don't know about you. So it was great meeting you last Saturday night down there in Hollywood, the Democratic Party event, mm-hmm. the main event. You're an attorney. You live in Palm Beach Gardens. Is that correct?
Yeah, just in that area.
Sure, right. In the Palm Beach County area, you're the daughter of a U.S. diplomat. You were in the Navy. You worked as a JAG, a judge advocate. Now, tell us more about it. But basically, you're running for Senate. Now, you've never ran for any other office, I don't believe. This is kind of a big, ambitious, bold move here. Tell me more about why you want to be a senator from the great state of Florida.
Well, first of all, thanks for the intro there. And it is the question, quite frankly, that I get the most often because it is a somewhat unusual move. You know, when I started to think about public service, which is where I started my career in public service in the military, and got called and really strong feelings to do it again and wanted to run for public office. And I started to think about, well, where do I fit? Where do I actually have something to contribute? I've lived in Florida for 4 years, and I don't know the local issues enough to claim that I have some fabulous platform to add to the county commission race or to some other local race. I think those positions are incredibly important. Everybody says, all politics is local. And I think if you're going to run for a county commission or some other seat, you really ought to have something that you're running on, something that you know and are passionate about. So that's what guides me. What do I know? What am I passionate about? Where am I value add? And in that category, I have to say that my strengths are on the national issues because those are the issues that I've studied and educated myself on and have thought about for many, many years. So I had specific ideas, and I had specific, proposals that I thought would need to be discussed at a federal level. So for me, the choice is either Congress or the Senate. And at the time that I was making the choice, the congressional seats were not available. There were incumbent Democrats where I was, and certainly to the south of me, and very entrenched Republicans to the north of me.
So now, who was your Congress member? Is that Patrick Murphy was your Congress member? Or?
Correct.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Patrick Murphy was my, and he had just won. So,
right.
You know, it was unlikely that I was going to unseat him, and especially in that district, there's some peculiarities to that.
It's
district.
A conservative district in many respects, right? I mean, Alan West used to represent that district.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that made for me to look at it from an analytical perspective and say, well, where is the seat that's most vulnerable? And from my assessment, Marco Rubio was the most vulnerable person. I mean, he spent the last 4 years basically positioning himself for a run at the presidency. But in my view, that meant that he didn't do a particularly good job of representing Floridians. And the one thing that he actually undertook, he you know, backpedaled quickly from it, which was the immigration reform. I think that alienated a lot of people. His performance on national TV was, as far as I was concerned, embarrassing. And so I felt like I was a very good contrast to Marco Rubio, that if I were the Democratic nominee, I would be giving voters a great choice as a, you know, vis-a-vis Marco Rubio. That's what was going through my mind when I embarked on this. Obviously, the political sands have since shifted, but it doesn't change the fact that I have very specific ideas and proposals that I want to advance, and I feel like the Senate seat is really the best place from which to do it.
Again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Midpoint here on WMNF. We're speaking with Pam Keith. She's a candidate for the U.S. Senate seat running for the Democratic nomination next year. Pam Keith, you were, of course, working it last weekend down in Hollywood at the Florida Democratic Party event.
Mm-hmm.
During the day, there was a whole entire day of caucus meetings with the various labor caucus, black caucus, disabled caucus, et cetera. I know you were at many of those meetings there. How did that go for you? What was the reaction you got from some of your fellow Florida Democrats?
I think it went extremely well. Some of them had heard about me through the grapevine or through internet, and some of them had heard me about me through Democratic Party operatives. The party line is that I, you know, I'm some fringe candidate that can't possibly win, and so they had fairly low expectations. And so when I came in there and they heard me speak, in pretty much every room, I spoke after Patrick Murphy. And so Patrick would go in there and he would give his stump speech and repeat the same speech from room to room. I went in and gave a much more energized and much more targeted message to each group. So their first take on me was, A, that I knew the issues, B, that I could speak extemporaneously and with some energy and passion. And I think that that left a very positive impression.
And can I ask, how old are you actually?
I'm 46.
Oh, wow. You don't look 46, if I dare say so. So you've been around for a while. And you served, you're with the Navy, right? You served as a JAG in the Navy. Where did you serve overseas at?
I served in Bahrain. My first duty station was in Norfolk, Virginia, and I was a defense counsel, criminal defense counsel. And I was a very junior lieutenant, and I kept volunteering for things just in the hopes of, you know, maybe getting a cruise or something, you know, down the line. And a job came open in Bahrain as an officer in charge, and I was a little bit too junior for the job. So I, you know, put my hand up and said, I'll go. And it just so happened that my senior officers felt like I was prepared and I'd had enough litigation experience by that point that they felt confident to send me out there. And so I spent 19 months in Bahrain as the officer in charge of the legal detachment. And my job was to fly out to the various ships and units in the area and deal with the problem children and people that were getting kicked out either administratively or going to court-martial. And I also provided legal service to all of the sailors in that area. So the guys that got Dear John letters or that were getting evicted from their apartments or heavily in debt to the, you know, predatory lenders and divorce issues. I counseled them in that capacity as well.
Interesting. Again, we're speaking with Pam Keith, a Senate candidate in Florida in 2016. What do you think of Patrick Murphy, your congressman and now the man you're running against for the Senate?
Well, I want to make clear, Mitch, that I very much supported Patrick Murphy in both of his congressional races. I've met him on several occasions. I think he's an affable person. He's likable, well-spoken, and I am very glad that he won both of those races. But let's make clear that the choice in the first race was Alan West, whom I considered to be odious, and the choice in the second race was Carl Domino, which was one of the weakest Republican candidates I think I've ever seen. The only way I could put it is that he was put up as a sacrificial lamb.
Right. He lost by 20 points, right? Yeah.
I mean, he didn't campaign at all. He put together just a laughable commercial and basically did no other campaigning whatsoever. So I think that those numbers paint perhaps a different picture than was the reality on the ground. But I think Patrick Murphy does have a future in politics, and I do think that he's a nice person. But I also think that in this particular race, which is a statewide race, that I'm the better candidate of the two of us.
Do you think, and we can definitely go over some of the issues where you're at. I know just reading your pamphlet or your postcard that I have of your different stance on the issues, you seem definitely to have more of a progressive point of view. Well, I know Patrick Murphy, you know, I've talked to him about this. The Patrick Murphy folks will say he's liberal enough. I know there's some criticism of some progressives. Now we know Alan Grayson may get in this race or may not. Mm-hmm. We're all kind of waiting to see about that. What are your thoughts about if Grayson gets in the contest?
I certainly hope he does, just because I think the interests of the voters are best served when they have choices, when they have a variety of people that get in and speak their point of view, and then the voters decide. And if we truly believe in our democracy, then we have to be comfortable with the idea that the voters may pick somebody different than, you know, what we would prefer. So I welcome any and all into the race. Let's have a robust discussion. And different points of view. And I think that the process of hearing each other's points of view and debating each other helps all of us as candidates refine our position.
Again,
I welcome Alan Grayson into it.
We are speaking with Pam Keith. She is running for Senate in 2016 for the Democratic nomination. We'll open the phones in a few minutes here if you want to ask her a question. 813-239-9663. Well, let's go over some of the issues. On the economy, I looked over your website. You support raising the minimum wage, but say that's not nearly enough to address the ills with our economy. And you talk about an across-the-board reduction in corporate taxes. What are we talking about here?
I'm talking about a reduction in corporate taxes with a certain caveat, right, which is that reduction results in greater percentage of the corporate profits going to regular employees. And that's the place where, you know, we have, as Democratic Party stated, that we advance middle class values or worker class values. And there are a lot of people out there who are making more than the minimum wage, but not enough to really breathe, not enough to take care of their families and feel like they're advancing. And while we see this sort of almost rocket increase in corporate profits, we're not seeing that commensurate increase in employee wages, not at all. And that's across the board, be that union employees or non-union employees. And the question is, well, how do you address that? And my proposals really have to do with, well, if we can incentivize corporations to shift more of that profit amongst non-executive employees. And one way to do that is to say, hey, we'll reduce your tax burden if you spread more money amongst your non-executive employees. And that's kind of a win-win for everybody. The corporation's tax burden goes down. Employees get real cash in their hands, and they end up spending it in the economy, which drives the economy forward.
Regarding immigration, we heard you earlier criticize Marco Rubio for kind of his about, you know, moving around on that issue after he was one of the co-sponsors of that comprehensive immigration bill 2 years ago. You talk about how you would like, first of all, people in the military to jump to the front of the line. But do you believe in a path to citizenship, which is what that legislation that Rubio sponsored calls for?
I absolutely do. I believe that. You know, we have 11 plus million, it's probably closer to 12 million people here in this country who are contributing every day to our economy. They're members of our communities, our families, our churches, our neighbors. It's not just some pocket of immigrants. They're cousins and wives and daughters and grandparents as U.S. citizens. They're part of their family. So the concept that we're going to go through all these communities and pick up people and send them back to their native country is just, it's anathema. It's just not who we are. Not only is it morally unsound, it's also unpragmatic. I mean, we simply don't have the money or the resources.
Let me ask you this before. Do you support what President Obama attempted to do back in November with his executive actions regarding shielding millions from deportation?
I do. And the reason is when people are not living under the sword of Damocles and are not fearing for what their future is going to be, they can become more active and more effective participants of our community. You know, a lot of that had to do with people who had children here and people who are studying in our universities and colleges. They're people whose full intention is to be full members of our society. So, yeah, I do support that. I know that the controversy is really more around, well, is that an executive action,
right,
or is that something that should have been through Congress? And, you know, I know that the executive is permitted to set priorities in how resources are expended. And I don't think it is beyond the pale for the executive to say, well, we are not to announce, if you will, a set of priorities that would give peace of mind to people who are here.
Again, if you're just tuning in right now, you're listening to Midpoint here on WMNF. It's 12:33 in the afternoon. I'm Mitch Perry speaking with Pam Keith. Her website, PamKeithForSenate2016.com, a Democratic candidate for the Senate nomination next year, the open seat where Marco Rubio vacated by his running for president. Pam Keith, before I actually get into some more issues, I do need to ask any thoughts that you have about the tragedy going on today, what happened last night in South Carolina, Charleston, South Carolina, where this young 21-year-old white man blew away nine people, black people, in a church there in South Carolina. Any thoughts about that?
You know, Mitch, I'm utterly speechless. And the first I heard of it, quite frankly, was when I was on hold with your show. I am calling you from London, England. I have been in the air for the last, you know, hours. So I didn't even know that this happened. It happened while I was essentially incommunicado. So I don't know what happened. I was listening while I was on hold to that news report, and I'm just gutted. Is really the only way I can express it.
Right, right. Yeah, it's such a tragedy. Let's move on. Let's talk about other issues here. Healthcare, of course, we've got this big issue going on with the Affordable Care Act in terms of the Supreme Court ruling on this the next week or two on that. You know, a lot of progressives always had issues with the ACA. They thought President Obama should have gone further out in terms of trying to get a single payer system or trying to get something, you know, a little more not work with the insurance companies. I mean, such obviously a huge overhaul he's attempted to do here. You know, if you can boil down your thoughts about the legislation, please give those to us right now.
Sure. And I think that the ACA is a first step. Personally, because I was an employment attorney for so long, I kind of know how corporations and companies go about providing health care to their employees, which is that they go to the marketplace, they find an insurance provider, and in a good situation, a corporation is going to provide their employee a choice of one of five or six plans. Many employers can only, you know, give their employees one plan. But that still makes the health care and the health plan design controlled principally by the employer. And that's been the history since the 50s when we started to provide health insurance as a fringe benefit. But over time, those costs escalated so quickly and so unpredictably for employers that it's become, you know, a significant burden to them. And they have really ratcheted back options and tried very hard to contain costs, which caused plans to get, you know, caps that, you know, kick people out for pre-existing conditions and all kinds of other things. The ACA was a good step in fixing those things. But what I think would be best for Americans is for each and every one of us to have individual insurance that's ours, that's not necessarily controlled by an employer, but that is, you know, individual and lifelong. And I think a lot of my progressive friends believe that, that the single-payer option is the way to do that, to have individual health care that's yours forever, no matter who you work for, if you work at all. The ACA is sort of a bridge between that to say, well, you know, maybe there are people who, if you don't have it through your employer, you have it through this marketplace of insurance carriers. But perhaps the next step between those two is to have a marketplace where anybody and everybody can buy insurance, and the employers, rather than choosing the plans, they rather subsidize the individual personally to buy their own plan. And that the benefit of that is that it takes employers out of the plan selection. The Hobby Lobby case doesn't exist in that scenario. And everybody can buy the plan that they are most comfortable with. And it puts that choice back in the hands of the individual so that you have that the benefits of universal coverage. It may not go quite as far as single payer, but it certainly goes to the point of allowing individuals to have more control over their health care choice.
Pam Keith, again, we're speaking to you right now. She was served in the military, and you do talk about military a lot on in terms of some of the policies that you're backing here. I guess before I even ask you about what it means to a strong military in 2015, let's talk about what's actually happening on the ground right now. Last week, President Obama approved an additional 450 troops to join the roughly 3,000 we still have in Iraq. They're going to be living inside secure bases nicknamed lily pads that are going to train Iraqi soldiers for a few weeks via lecture and drill instruction. Then the graduates will be sent outside the wire to fight the Islamic State. There's a lot of criticism about this. In fact, down at the Florida Democratic Party event last Saturday, I talked to Tulsi Gabbard. I don't know if you had a chance to meet her, congresswoman from Hawaii, who thinks that the Obama administration is not going about this the right way. Anyway, what were your thoughts about what we're doing vis-a-vis Iraq and fighting ISIS?
Well, you know, I don't know that anybody can look into a crystal ball and assess what is the right way, because that is really one of the most intractable problems we will ever encounter. The fight between ISIS and the Iraqi forces is really a fight between Sunni and Shia Muslims. The Saddam Hussein originally was Sunni, loosely Sunni, his Ba'athist party, but what he really was you know, oppressive of the Shia minority. When we came in there and we took Saddam Hussein out, we put in a Shia leadership and pushed all the Sunnis out, which, you know, they went into Syria, regrouped, and came back. The fight between who ought to control Iraq, be it Sunni or Shia, is not something that we can decide for them, period. And it has been going on for millennia. And by removing Saddam Hussein, we gave greater power to Iran, and Iran is basically, you know, fomenting proxy wars throughout the Middle East, as we've seen in Yemen and other places, from the Shia, you know, as the stronghold of Shia power. So we've upped the power of the Shia population, and they are trying to hold on to gains that they now have, and the Sunni population is just not having it. So if we put troops there, you know, we have to be prepared to leave troops there. Because as soon as they take troops out, that fight will continue. So the plan that President Obama is putting into place is a plan where we train the Iraqi forces to be able to be resistant to ISIS, to contain ISIS.
Do you think that's realistic, Pam Keith? Do you think so? I mean, there's a lot of frustration that, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and it's still not really working in terms of training these Iraqi forces.
I think that I think those who are skeptical have a good reason to be skeptical, because realistically, can those forces stave off ISIS for a long period of time? I can't say that I buy into that notion. But what is the alternative, Mitch? Just let ISIS run amok? I mean, we have both a moral and a fiscal obligation to contain ISIS to the best of our ability. And we at least have to give it a good shot and try to see if we can get the Iraqi forces to do so.
Some Republicans have been critical, some Republicans have been critical about the fact that we moved troops out back in 2011, back when the Cessation of Forces Agreement said that we had to pull troops out. Some folks are saying that President Obama should have fought harder to keep more troops there, and that's why we're paying for this price right now. What do you think about that thought?
I think that's an extreme oversimplification, because what the Republicans failed to respond to was, okay, so when do you think we could have pulled them out?
Right.
And that's when they go silent, because there would never be a good time to pull out those troops if the troops were the only thing keeping the peace. If the troops were the only, unless and until you were willing to commit to have a permanent force there, like we do in North South Korea, unless and until you want to put the treasure and resources and lives of Americans in permanent place, then no matter when we would have pulled those troops out, the ISIS thing would have happened. Because the ISIS thing is a deeply, it is a deeply existential reaction of Sunni Muslims in Iraq. No matter what, when we pulled out, that Sunni force was going to come back and try to take their country back, because they were concerned that Shia government is apostate. They view it. So there, no matter when it was, whether it was 2013, 2014, 2020, it would have happened.
We're speaking with Pam Keith right now. She is a candidate for U.S. Senate, the Democratic nomination, running right now against Patrick Murphy. Alan Grayson may get in the race the next few weeks. Of course, the election is until next August, so we've got plenty of time for folks to learn more about her, but may not have heard about her, and that's why we were happy to have her on our airwaves right now. Another thing I want to ask you about in terms of our place internationally, Pam Keith, is one of the things you talk about that you believe in is champions America's role as global leader. And, there's a lot of freaking out about that, especially I hear it a lot with the Republican candidates for president, where people think that the world is, or the United States' place in that is a little bit adrift right now. Some blame President Obama. Others think it's a much bigger issue than that. But, of course, we're no longer this dominant country that we used to be in terms of telling people what to do or using our military to enforce that, or even using our soft power to enforce that. What do you mean when you say you champion America's role was a global leader?
Well, I think the people who are taking that position are a bit myopic. I spend a great deal of time outside of the country, both because I have family overseas and because I enjoy traveling, but also I've lived overseas, and I can assure you that America is still very much the global leader, very much so. And we set the tone in many, many ways. Our globe is no longer broken up into, binary, east and west, as it was during the Cold War years. But never doubt that countries in Africa, countries in Asia, countries in Europe are still very much looking to the U.S. for setting the tone, picking the agenda, leading on most diplomatic sorts of interactions. Because let's be honest. Diplomacy is always the best and first choice, but it is not a choice at all if it cannot be enforced. So the ability to back up what we say with military force, if necessary, is a critical component to being able to get anything done in global agreement or in partnership. There are forces out there that want to be global leaders too and global players. Obviously Russia, certainly China, but let's not ignore Iran. They want to be a global leader too, and they're certainly the global leader of the Shia population. And as between the choice between Russia, China, Iran, or India or anybody else, I pick us over all of them to set the tone internationally.
Again,
to be us.
We are speaking with Pam Keith. She's a Democratic candidate for Senate next year in 2016. Our phone number to talk to her right now, she's over in London, but you can hear us loud and clear here in Tampa, is 813-239-9663. We've got Tina calling in from Tampa who wants to speak with Pam Keith. Hi, Tina. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you. So many topics, but let me focus on this. What about tax reform, as in multinational corporations who are not paying a dime. And here you, every time there's a problem, what we hear from the Republicans is, oh, cut the budget, cut it out, get rid of it. But, you know, when you've got these corporations who aren't paying anything, it's pretty hard to, you know, feel good about, you know, paying taxes, and on the burden seems to be on those who can least afford it. What are your views? What do you think you could do, or is there anything that can be done?
Well, Tina, thank you for the question, and I think it's a really, really good one. I will preface it to say that corporate taxes account for about 9% of our total tax revenue right now. Back in the day, it was as much as 30%, but now it's down to 9%. So you're raising this issue, I think, is just really spot on. There are two things that I think can help us look at this issue. And one of the things is that our tax code, our corporate tax code, is based on a premise of a subsidiary. And you know, a company is either a U.S. company or it's a foreign company. And those two statuses determine how they are treated under our tax code. I would like to explore, and I don't have necessarily the answers, but I would like to explore more of a pay-to-play view of corporate taxation, whereas corporations should be taxed based on their access to the U.S. marketplace. I mean, we have 350 or 60 million American buyers here, and U.S. companies have the advantage of servicing this market. But if they take the advantage of that position, don't act as good corporate citizens, then why should we permit that? It's something to think about. Another place where I think we need to look at really carefully in terms of corporate taxation is, you know, carried interest, which is a function of treating compensation like capital gains. You know, our capital gains taxation system is somewhat illogical to me. And especially when you look at hedge funds and private equity funds, some of that just doesn't make any sense. But I still think at the base, at the root of the problem, is that 47% of our tax revenue comes from individual taxpayers like you and me. Another 37% comes from payroll taxes, which is what employers pay. And a very, very small slice comes from corporate and excise taxes. I think that balance is just off. And when we look at simplifying our tax code, changing that mix, I think it has to be a part of the solution.
Okay, Tina, thank you for very much for the phone call there. I want to ask you this now. Pam, you said you've only lived there in Palm Beach County for like 4 years, right? And so you really weren't familiar with some of the local issues. I want to ask about your party, though, the Florida Democratic Party, because there was a task force that was convened by party chair Allison Tant after the debacle in the 2014 elections that produced this report that came out over the weekend down there in Hollywood. And I was just wanting to get your thoughts about this. One of the things I'm just highlighting here is the messaging, which is listed in this report, which was Senator Bill Nelson and Val Demings, the former police chief in Orlando, are the ones supervising this report. Let me just read to our listeners what this says about it. It says, the task force reviewing the messaging used by Democratic campaigns in 2014, while the message proved powerfully persuasive to many groups, it failed to connect in North and rural Florida, where Democrats fell to new lows. In 2014, Democrats did not talk to Floridians clearly enough, long enough, or specifically enough about their real-life economic circumstances. The national economy, fueled by the hard work of everyday people from Miami to Seattle, has rebounded since the Great Recession, but middle-income Floridians are still struggling to make ends meet, squeezed by stagnant wages and the rising cost of living. The hard work is resulting in record profits for American corporations, but the middle class is not seeing the results of their effort. I don't know if you followed much about what the campaign was going on last year in Florida. Does that hit you at all there? What are your thoughts? That's what the Dems are saying was their problem last year, in part, in terms of helping get Charlie Crist elected, for example.
Well, I am not a pundit. I'm a candidate, and I'm also a voter and a proud Democrat. And from my perspective, for whatever it's worth, I think the problem was that it didn't have a platform. It didn't have specific proposals. What it had was a don't vote for Rick Scott platform. which quite frankly is not a platform. Don't vote for that guy is not the solution. And when people are struggling with day-to-day existence, they're looking for people who provide solutions. I think it's part of the overall devolution of our politics that our candidates don't speak about real proposals anymore because they fear criticism. They fear being part. And so what they do is they speak in platitudes and general thoughts and principles or things that have been poll tested or whatever. And so they don't present answers. They don't present ideas. It's all about being vague and unassailable. And I think that didn't work the last time. I don't think it'll work this time. I think the voters, I hate to go on and on,
yeah.
Mitch, but the party is disrespecting voters, period. It is taking on a paternalistic and condescending view that, you know, so long as the voters just do what the party tells them to do, it's all going to be fine. And that permeates every aspect of the way the party is acting these days.
Interesting. Yeah.
From, you know, I mean, I think it's internally inconsistent to say that we're the party that protects voting rights and at the same time actively work to ensure that voters don't know who the candidates are. That's inconsistent.
Now how does that play out? You mean in terms of like not knowing who the candidates are?
Well, I mean, when you put out press releases and you continue to make it sound like there's only one candidate
in the race. I see.
That is a symptom of that kind of paternalistic condescension.
Yeah, so you think that the party is basically already rallied around Patrick Murphy right now?
Oh well, that's beyond evidence.
Right.
And insisting that he is the only person who could possibly win, and therefore all others should either stay out of it or, you know, should be ignored. That's not respecting voters.
Right.
That's not respecting the role of primaries and the voter choice. The report that we got from the FDP talked about messaging but had absolutely nothing about how to change being vague and ambiguous in our messaging. It didn't say anything about candidates actually giving voters real proposals to consider.
Let me ask you this.
It didn't
yeah.
say anything about reaching – oh, I'm so sorry.
No. Yeah, no, okay, but let me ask you this, because again, if you're just tuning in right now, we've got a few minutes left to go here, 12:53 in the afternoon on WMNF. We're speaking with Pam Keith. She is a Democratic candidate running for Senate next year, running, as we're talking about, against Patrick Murphy, who was somewhat of the establishment favorite, although both Allison Tant and Debbie Wasserman Schultz denied that it was the case last week when queried by reporters. But let me ask you this, and I hate to be getting to the process thing, but, you know, fundraising, right? We know that Florida is a huge state. There's 10 media markets here. It's Patrick Murphy is raising a ton of money right now. Are you going to be able to get up and down the state, get to Tampa Bay area, effectively give your message out like you're talking about today? Are you going to do that, though? I think there are some, you know, people will question whether you can do that.
Well, I mean, if the question is, can I raise money like Patrick Murphy is? No, and I don't even profess to try. But the question is, can I get up and down the state? Absolutely. And I'm already doing that and going to continue doing that. I think there is absolutely no substitute for the personal touch and reaching in a personal way to voters. So it is not a question of whether you can get up and down the state. You know, we have, 18 months, 17 months to do that. So, yes, absolutely I can do that. The bigger question is what is the prioritization here? If you start with the priority of raising money and figure out whether you have a good candidate or a good message later, then you tailor your message to your money. And that, unfortunately, does not work. I think the first priority is to have a good candidate. The second priority is to have a great message. And the third priority has to be money. Because if you have those first two things, the money will come. But if you start out with being beholden to the money first, it is very unlikely that you are going to get a message or a candidate that resonates with real working people.
Indeed.
And that's really what happened with Charlie Crist, in my opinion. We are the party that is inclusive of minorities, of women, of our LGBT brothers and sisters, of immigrants, of people who are just scrambling to make a living. They're all welcome in our tent, and yet we are not running candidates that live that experience, know it, or can relate to it. And that is killing us.
We cannot keep
claiming that that is our party if we don't run candidates that look and act and sound and know that experience.
She is Pam Keith. She's running for Senate. We just have a couple minutes left to go here. Pam, I don't know if you heard Pope Francis. Maybe you didn't because you were on a plane. But Pope Francis came out with his encyclical today. He's calling for a radical transformation of politics, economics, and individual lifestyles to confront environmental degradation and climate change. It's a 184-page report. You know, I don't know how much sway the Pope has with Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio. Doesn't seem like much from what we've heard earlier this week. But nevertheless, I know you say you believe in fighting, combating climate change and working for climate science. Are you concerned about the way that this country is reacting or not reacting to that reality?
Absolutely, yes, I'm concerned about it. I believe very firmly and very strongly in clean energy and renewable energy. And because I work for an energy company, I know the downsides of those sources of energy. Right now, solar is great potential, but we don't have the capacity to store solar energy over a long period of time. And once we break the code on that, solar could power the entire country. But we're not there yet. So I do believe in clean and renewable energy. But the bigger problem, and the one that we're really not talking about, is how much we consume in gas and oil, our oil consumption. And it is devastating to us in terms of putting carbon emissions into the air. It's also not particularly great for our foreign policy, priorities.
Right. Right. Hey, Pam, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you here, but we just have a couple callers here now, so I want to try to squeeze them in before we have to leave here in another minute and a half. So, Clay from Wendell Lakes. Clay, you're on the air.
Yes, it's nice to hear your fresh voice there, Pam. I used to be a member of the DEC here in Pasco County since 2006. But they got rid of me because of their criticism, and I'm criticizing for exactly the same things you do, and I've told this to Mitch before. The reason the Democrats lost in the governor race is because they ignored Nan Rich and promoted Charlie Crist. And they lost in the race over there with Alex Sink over Jessica Ehrlich. And they lost in getting Christman as a mayor by supporting Christman over Kathleen Ford. These guys are out there, just like you say, picking for us the candidate they want us to have. And I feel terrible for you because they ignore you. They act like you're not there. They do these things and promote just Patrick Murphy. It's too bad because you're clearly the better candidate.
Okay, Clay, thank you. I didn't mean to cut you off, but I have to move on. Sorry, and 1 second here. I'm going to go to David St. Pete. I'm sorry, Pam, I wanted to get David in. David, you're on the air. You have a few seconds left to go here.
All right, thanks for letting me come on. Pam, how are you?
I'm great, David. Thank you so much.
Good. I've been listening to what you're saying, and I agree with a lot of your points and what you want your platform to be. And it's at this point, just trying to find out how I can get information about you and your campaign as I'm living here in St. Pete. Maybe there's something I can do to help you here.
Thank you so much. I can be found on the internet at pamkeith.com, PAMKEITH.com. That's my website. Uh-huh. I'm also on Facebook at Pam Keith for U.S. Senate.
Okay.
I tweet at Pam Keith 2016.
Okay.
That's at Pam Keith 2016. I'm also on Instagram at that same address at PamKeith2016.
Okay. Pam. Thank you, Pam. I'm so sorry to cut you off. But you got all your information in there. Definitely the main thing, Pam Keith for Senate, 2016.com. Pam Keith joining us from London this afternoon. Pam, we look forward to seeing you in Tampa when you come up here to campaign over the next course of the next year or so. Glad we can give you an opportunity to talk to listeners here in the Tampa Bay area. Thank you so much for joining us.
I look forward to seeing you all, and thank you so much for having me, Mitch. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks a lot, Pam Keith. You are listening to WNO Tampa, 88.5 FM. I want to thank James Rossi, Frank Knox, and Albert Wilmington-Ligare. See you next week.